It's the 21st of August. I hope you're back from vacation. You're here with me on Beyond the Matrix. This is Patricia Corey. Welcome. Tonight I have one of my favorite subjects, as you all know, extraterrestrial life. And who better to talk to us about this than Kathleen Martin, who was the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. We'll be talking about her amazing book, Captured, which I discussed some time ago with Stanton Friedman, who is a regular, been on the show three times, and hopefully we'll be back. So I'd like to start off the show, before I bring on Kathleen, reminding you all, the Syrian Revelations, www.syrianrevelations.net, the books that have prophesied these times. Please check now. You can find them on Amazon as well as on my site and all of the other bookstores, so keep that in mind. All right, here we go. We've got Kathleen Martin on. Let me just tell you a little bit about her. As I said, she was the niece of Betty Hill. She, let's see, she was 13 on September 20th, 1961, when Betty Hill phoned her nearby home to report that the previous evening she and her husband Barney had encountered a flying saucer in New Hampshire's White Mountains. This has been a very important story and event in the world of UFO abduction, and tonight we're going to get it secondhand, from Betty's niece, a very close relative, and we hope to really, really get the story here. So welcome, Kathleen.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And I've wanted to have you on for a long, long time, and finally we've hooked up, so thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
So let's start by just reviewing a little bit before we get to the book. I'm just so fascinated about, you know, I want to precede this by saying that I met Benjamin Simon, the psychiatrist that brought Betty and Barney into hypnosis way back when.
Oh, did you interview him?
No, this was when I was, I don't want to say youngster, but I was not completely on my mission, so to speak. I was dabbling, and for reasons that involved my work, I was, I think it was in Boston where I met him. And
oh.
I ended up going to his studio, and I saw the mock-up of the alien that Betty had recounted in her sessions. And so I just feel like I have a little personal interest in this story.
Yes. Well, I knew Ben Simon as well, and I even had dinner at his house one time with Betty and Barney.
Wow. Okay, tell us all about it. They were your aunt and uncle. What kind of people were they? What did they do? What did they do for a living, for starters?
Well, first of all, Betty was a social worker for the state of New Hampshire. She was very much involved in the civil rights movement and very politically active. And that is probably what attracted her to Barney, because he, too, was very active in the civil rights movement. He worked for the post office. He had an IQ of 140, and he was a highly motivated, charismatic kind of man who had very strong feelings about the civil rights movement. And eventually he was a lifelong member of the NAACP, but he also served on the New England Regional Board. He served locally as a legal redress and was eventually appointed by the governor of the state of New Hampshire to serve on the advisory committee to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission and the Office of Economic Opportunity. He was also the first executive director of the Rockingham County Community Action Program. He and Betty worked on literacy programs in the state of New Hampshire, when you had to take a literacy test in order to be able to vote, in order to enroll and register voters in the state. And actually, the three of us went to Lyndon Johnson's inauguration together due to our political activities. So I grew up in a very politically involved family. Not a family had thought much about UFOs or discussed UFOs.
And you were 13 years old when they encountered this, when they had this first encounter.
That's correct. I was 13, and I had actually been in Niagara Falls about a month before Betty and Barney decided to take their trip to Niagara Falls. I liked it so well, I had such a great time, that I was talking to Betty and Barney about it, and Betty mentioned that she had never been there. So I think that that's probably what prompted Barney to come up with the idea of surprising Betty with a short trip to Niagara Falls and up through Canada.
And that's when the encounter occurred.
And that is when the encounter occurred, yes. They were returning home.
They were returning home. So they never had any interest, as far as you recall, of you. The reason why I'm asking these questions is because it's obvious, and I'm sure you have had your ears full of people trying to debunk the story. I'm not a debunker, of
Absolutely.
Course.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But just to support and validate everything that you've written about, and to give credit and validation to Betty and Barney, I'm asking you these questions.
Okay.
So you say they were not particularly UFO buffs before this occurred.
No, they were not. Barney was a confirmed skeptic. However, my mother had a sighting in 1957. And this was a multiple witness sighting of a large craft that hovered over a field, and smaller craft flew toward it, was sort of absorbed into it, and then it ascended vertically and disappeared into the sky. So my mother was excited about having this sighting and told Betty and Barney about it, as well as my grandparents, who lived right across the street from me. And I actually didn't know this until 1961, on September 20th, that my mother had actually had this observation. Betty was more open-minded about it than Barney. Her sister told her about this. She thought that it could possibly have happened. But Barney was very close-minded and said that it was impossible. He didn't believe it.
Do you think there might be any correlation between the two events, and that two sisters having events might not be such a coincidence?
The possibility exists in what abduction researchers know today about how it seems to run along family lines. You know, I can't say for sure whether that is true or not, but it certainly is an interesting coincidence.
It is. Can you elaborate a bit about what the researchers say about this family line phenomenon?
Well, yes. There seems to be a longitudinal study where multi-generationally family members are abducted and taken on board craft and given physical examinations. So, you know, perhaps there was a grandmother and then who was abducted originally, and then her daughter, or more than one daughter, were abducted, and then the daughter's children were abducted. This is fairly common in abduction literature. It's something that the researchers are finding that they believe is true.
It would certainly seem that it's a discussion, or it would have to do with the genes and the genetic heritage from generation to generation.
Yes, that's a possibility.
You work with MUFON, right?
Yes, I do. I was actually the director of field investigator training on the national board for more than 10 years.
Wow.
And,
And did your interest in UFOs, obviously, was it triggered by this event?
Yes, it was. It was triggered for the first time on September 20th, 1961, as I listened to my mother's side of the conversation as she spoke to Betty about their observation the night before, their close encounter with a UFO. And within a couple of days, my parents and my brothers and I drove down to Betty and Barney's house and saw the physical evidence. So I was a first-hand witness to...
What is the physical evidence that you saw?
First of all, the tops of Barney's shoes, his best dress shoes, were scraped. And they weren't just scuffed, they were actually scraped. And later he found out that this had happened when he was dragged on board the craft as his shoes bumped along the rocks. Their watches were permanently destroyed. They were wind-up watches. They never worked again after that night. The dress that Betty was wearing was torn at the top of the zipper. There was a 2-inch tear on one side, and there was a 1-inch tear in the actual zipper, that very thick zipper fabric on the other side. The lining of her dress was torn. Her hem was torn down on the right-hand side, and the strap to Bonnie's binoculars was broken. And, well, there is an explanation from that. He fought very hard to pull them down away from his face so that he could run to the car to try to escape from this craft that was hovering within 100 feet of him as he was observing the beings on board the craft. And this was all conscious recollection. This was not brought out under hypnosis. I want to make that.
Okay, let's go back through his retelling of, from a conscious point of view, the information that you got, and of course is in the books, of exactly what happened, what they recalled happening before they lost consciousness.
Okay. There's one more thing I want to mention first, though, that I observed,
yes.
And that was the 12 to 18 highly polished circular spots on the trunk of Betty's car, the one they were driving that night. They were all about the size of silver dollars. They were all the same size, and they caused a compass needle to spin and spin. So getting to what they actually observed that night, Betty and Barney made 3 stops where they actually got out of the car and looked at the craft through binoculars. On the first stop, which was just north of Franconia Notch in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, the craft had descended and was growing larger and larger. Betty observed it as it crossed in front of the face of the moon, flashing multicolored lights. When Barney took the binoculars to observe it, it was moving toward Vermont, sort of in a northwest trajectory, and it suddenly turned very rapidly and descended in his direction, reminded him of a commercial aircraft coming in for a landing. That's how fast it was coming and how rapidly it became very, very large in the sky. They got back into the car and started to drive down the road heading south. As Betty was watching it and Barney was driving, he would stop occasionally just to take a fast look at it, and he was driving fairly slowly through this about an 8-mile stretch of road. He did stop near a landmark called Indian Head. It was a natural granite formation the Old Man of the Mountain, natural granite formation, and it was 43 feet high. That was the profile of the Old Man. And the craft went around the back of Cannon Mountain, and the Old Man's profile was on one side of the mountain. And it stopped right beside the Old Man's profile. Betty and Barney could observe at that point that the craft was about twice the length of the Old Man's profile. And it seemed to be revolving or rotating. There was a sort of a blip of light that was going around. It seemed to be cigar-shaped at that time, And they returned to the car and observed it as it was bouncing back and forth in the sky, ascending and descending vertically, and coming closer and closer. Barney grew quite concerned. He was actually attempting to explain it away as being a fighter jet or something like that, but he couldn't account for the complete lack of noise. So it was completely silent, and it was flying in an unconventional pattern. So Barney started to look for a highway patrolman that he could report this to. He wasn't able to find one, but he was greatly relieved when he entered an area called Indian Head. This was at the south end of Franconia Notch, and the Indian Head area was a tourist attraction area. There were cabins that people could stay in. They saw the Indian Head Resort there, and there were a few other cabins. There was also a tourist attraction called Nature Land, and Barney was beginning to feel more comforted because he felt that he was back, at least in civilization. And the craft was descending lower, and they were looking for a place where they could pull over, get out of the car, and get another good look at this craft. But before they could even do that, the craft rapidly shifted ahead, stopped to the right side of the road. And this is U.S. Highway Route 3 they were on. It was the major north-south route at the time. But it was the...
They hadn't gotten back to Indian Head completely back.
Pardon me?
They hadn't gotten back to the resort area completely. Is that what you're saying?
No, they actually had passed the resort area. They were area during the off-season at this point when the craft shifted ahead. At that time, it was very different than it is today. That area is busy on September 19th and September 20th. Back in 1961, it was very sparsely populated at that point. So the craft at that point, this is about 2 miles south of the Indian Head profile, stopped above the road, causing Barney to have to stop his car directly in the middle of the road. It was so close that it filled up the entire field of their windshield. They could observe a red light on each side of what was then a disc-shaped craft. There was a double row of rectangular windows that traveled around the edge or the rim of this craft. And Barney got out of the car to get a better look at it. When he did, it shifted from its position over the car to the east to a field. It was a farmer's field with a little farm stand. There was an apple tree there and just a little ledge of either very high, low mountains or high hills. And the craft shifted to a position right over that field, and Barney walked over to take a look at it while Betty remained in the car.
Betty, you mentioned in the book that Barney observed figures in the craft.
Yes, he did. There were about 8 to 11 figures in the craft. He looked at them through the binoculars. One remained at the window while the others turned around and walked toward a wall and in what seemed to be the back of this hallway that encircled the craft. And their arms were moving in an upward position as if they were moving levers or some type of controls. And when this happened, the craft shifted position toward Barney, and little fin-like structures seemed to be coming out of each side where the red lights had been. Something was also beginning to drop out of the bottom of the craft. Barney was very frightened by the appearance of these beings and by the appearance of the leader who seemed to be taking control of his ability to take self-initiated action. Barney was frightened. He wanted to go for his gun for protection because he thought he was in danger. He wasn't able to do that. He was being told to keep the binoculars up to his eyes and to just keep looking. He noticed that they were all dressed in black outfits. He noticed that the one at the window seemed to have an evil kind of look about him. He was frightened, Barney. There was another one who reminded him of the facial expression of a red-headed Irishman. Dr. Simon, this gets into hypnosis and not into Barney's conscious recollection, but Dr. Simon asked him why he thought of a red-headed Irishman, and he said it's because the Irish tended to be hostile toward African-Americans and that Barney didn't feel threatened by this one.
But that wasn't a conscious recollection, you're saying.
But there was conscious recollection of one that did remind him of a red-headed Irishman. That he didn't explain why. So he did have a conscious recollection of observing these figures on board the craft.
He consciously recalled that he was being told to keep looking.
Yes. He consciously recalled being frightened because he thought that they were about to carry out a plan, and that plan was to catch him like a bug in a net. Those are his words to Walter Webb in October of 1961.
Who is Walter Webb?
Walter Webb was the NICAP investigator, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, and he came to Betty and Barney's house on October 21st, 1961, and interviewed Betty and Barney for 6 hours. But Barney told that story to my father within 2 days of the time that it happened. So this was conscious recollection. Barney just could not remember all of the facial features of these beings, and he seemed to develop a mental block. And that was the dilemma, is that he couldn't get beyond this mental block to describe what they looked like. He remembered returning to the car, running back frantically, telling Betty that he thought that they were going to be captured. The craft again shifted position and traveled right above the top of the vehicle, and Betty and Barney heard a series of beeping or buzzing sounds that seemed to bounce off the trunk of the vehicle. They were mechanical sounding, and they were code-like. And this was very perplexing because they caused the car to vibrate and they caused the sense of vibration to pass through Betty's and Barney's bodies. And they started to become drowsy when this happened.
And they have recollection of this consciously?
Yes, they did.
Both
they reported that to the family. That's why on September 20th, when they returned home, my mother suggested to Betty that she take a compass to the trunk of the car. And it was actually our neighbor, who was a physicist, who made that suggestion to my mother to see what would happen, what this craft might have done if it had any kind of physical effect on the vehicle itself. So this was all part of conscious recollection. They also reported it to Pease Air Force Base on September 21st, 1961. The only thing that Betty and Barney neglected to mention was the figures that Barney saw on board the craft. And Barney thought that the story was ridiculous enough, he didn't want to be thought a crackpot by the Air Force. So that's why he withheld that information. But we knew about it.
And how was he received by the Air Force when he reported this story?
Well, initially, when Betty made the report, she felt that they weren't taking her seriously. But then she was transferred to somebody else who took it very, very seriously. So seriously that Barney decided that he would talk to him. He wanted to talk to Barney about his observation of the craft from the field. So he was taken very seriously. They transferred the phone call to another area. Betty and Barney never knew where it was transferred to, but it was another base. And the report was made. There were two phone calls in all, and it was taken seriously.
This is very interesting because one of the misconceptions is that Betty and Barney didn't remember hardly anything before the hypnosis. And
that's
so
true,
it's
and that
very
is a
interesting
huge misconception.
To learn that
absolutely.
They had so much recall.
They did. They had Betty recalled turning off from U.S. Highway Route 3 onto a secondary road. Barney didn't initially remember that part of it, but it did come back to him a little bit later. So,
let me interject something. Before we go any further, for people who are just coming on now, I have with me Kathleen Marden. She's the author and the co-author of Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, co-authored with Stanton Friedman. And her website is kathleenmarden.googlepages.com. You can learn more about what we're talking tonight and learn more about the author, Kathleen Marden. In fact, you co-authored this with Stanton Friedman, who is a person I adore. How did you bring Stanton in on this project? What role did he play in writing the book?
Well, Stan and I had known each other for close to 20 years. We had both served on MUFON before. We had been on at board meetings together, had seen each other at conventions. And I had actually even visited with him at Betty's house. He and Betty were friends, and he had actually met both Betty and Barney before Barney died. He was very impressed by them. Stan was one of the original people involved in Marjorie Fish's star map work. He was the scientist who initiated the vetting of her star map identification when she had been having some difficulty attracting scientific interest in her work. And
do you want to elaborate for the people that don't know what you're talking about?
Pardon me?
Can you elaborate on that star work for people that may not have heard about this?
Yes. When Betty was on board the craft, she revealed under hypnosis that she had observed a star map on board this craft. She had said to the leader, I know you're not from around here. Where are you?
Talk about a slight understatement, huh?
It certainly was. He went to the wall, and he did something to it, and what appeared was a three-dimensional star map. And there were stars on this map that were as large as a nickel, and there were also stars that were as small as a pinpoint. And
was it like a hologram?
It was like a hologram, yes, it was. That's what Betty and Marjorie compared it to. And so Dr. Simon suggested to Betty that if she could remember this map, and only if she could remember it accurately, she would be able to draw it. This was part of a post-hypnotic suggestion. And she actually did draw the map. Of course, Betty never did find out where these figures or these extraterrestrial beings were from. They didn't tell her. But Marjorie Fish, being highly skeptical about the whole thing and curious at the same time, after she read The Interrupted Journey by John Fuller, started to build three-dimensional models of our galaxy. And she was looking for sun-like stars that could support life, and she was looking within our local galactic neighborhood. So she worked on this project for a number of years. She ended up building 26 three-dimensional models, and eventually she did come up with an identification. It took having to get accurate distance data, which was difficult for her at first. There were also two stars on the map that we didn't even find until 1972. So it wasn't until 1972 that Marjorie found a perfect match. And so Stanton Friedman found scientists who were willing to vet Marjorie's work for accuracy. And according to Marjorie's work, and it was accurate, the base planets, or the base stars, would have been Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2.
So these beings, in essence, then you're saying that they were from Zeta Reticulans.
That's what Marjorie Fish's work revealed.
That's fascinating.
They did not tell, they never told Betty they were from Zeta Reticuli.
Okay, let's go through this, what they did tell Betty, what she recalled and finally was able to reveal under hypnosis.
Okay. About the star map or about everything?
Well, I'd love to start talking about how they appeared to her, what they looked like, and whatever you feel was the most salient information and interaction with her.
Okay. Well, initially, she was very, very frightened by them. As they approached the car, she and Barney were able to observe that they were non-human. They had a non-human gait, and actually, Barney even recalled this in November of 1963 while he was at my childhood home without hypnosis. This was prior to hypnosis that he recalled this part of the capture. But anyway, there were a group of men in the road. Their engine died. The group divided into two groups. Three approached Betty's door. Three approached Barney's door. The Hills attempted to escape, particularly Betty, who was frightened and crying. She wanted to run into the woods. She was not able to escape. They opened the door. They pointed some kind of object at her, and at that point she lost consciousness. It's very interesting to me because I did the comparative analysis of the hypnosis tapes vis-a-vis the dream material, and this was completely different from what Betty recalled in her dreams. Yet Betty and Barney recalled the same details under hypnosis, and they were hypnotized separately, and Dr. Simon imposed amnesia. So not only could they not discuss this, but they couldn't even remember after they were brought out of hypnosis what they had said. So I found this confirmatory evidence that something really had happened. They were taken down the path taken aboard the craft. Betty tore her dress when she awakened and attempted to flee. She kicked the captor who was next to her, holding her tightly, but she wasn't able to flee. They took her into an examining room. It was a wedge-shaped examining room. Took Barney beyond her into a separate examining room. They gave Betty and Barney pretty much the same type of exam, and I would say that that examination was focused on the differences between human beings and them. Their skin, the alien skin, was different from our skin. It was different in color. It was different in texture. It was very smooth, but there were bumpy areas along their skin. They examined Betty's and Barney's eyes. Their eyes were different. Their eyes were much, much larger than ours. Betty and Barney both described them, and many, many abductees have described them as being very unusual, kind of, I've heard over and over again, crazy-looking eyes. They had vertical pupils, and the iris filled up most of the eye with only a little bit of the white showing, and that was yellowish in color. They had very tall, very, very small, flat noses with flared nostrils. They did not have an exterior portion of the ear, just a hole. They were completely hairless. Their hands were much longer and thinner than ours. They had about three to four very long, narrow fingers, and there might have been a webbed area at the top. Betty and Barney thought there might have been, but they weren't quite positive about that, but they did bring that up and mention that. They didn't notice fingernails, so, you know, we don't know about that. Their skeletal structure was different than ours. They had a different type of gait. They walked in sort of a rolling gait. Betty described it as sea legs. And barrel chest, but very thin arms and legs. So you can see that they were very different from us, and those were the things that they were examining on Betty and Barney. They were very interested in their joints, in their skeletal structure. They were interested in their nervous system. They counted the vertebrae in their spine. So it was that sort of thing. They took hair samples. They took skin samples.
And, did they have injections, as so many people have reported that they've had some kind of really invasive examination and injection? Does she recall that?
Betty and Barney did not recall injections. However, a very large needle, 4 to 6 inch long needle, was thrust into Betty's navel, causing her a great deal of pain. That was before the days of amniocentesis and before laparoscopy. And I found very, very interesting that several months ago I heard on Science News that we had a new procedure, a non-invasive procedure, a minimally invasive procedure for performing laparoscopy, where the wand is now actually inserted through the navel rather than through an incision in the abdominal wall. So our technology has finally caught up with what Betty and Barney experienced, or what Betty experienced in 1961.
Okay, that's pretty hard to handle. Okay, so then after these examinations, I understood from the book that she had some sort of connection with the leader.
Yes, she did. After the examination was finished, the examiner, there was only one examiner, he went into the room with Barney, and the leader remained behind in the room with Betty. She had overcome her fear of him at that point, and started to converse with him. And the conversation was, as I already explained, about where he was from. There was also a conversation about things like what is age, how do we age, what types of foods do we eat. There was also a book that Betty observed on the counter in that room. This book, appeared to be made out of a plasticine or plastic type of material. It was large and had a thick cover and thin plastic type pages with symbols on them arranged in a vertical pattern in about five rows that she had never observed before. And she was actually able to reproduce from memory those symbols for me, and they're in the appendix of the book Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. She did this in the year 2000. Her memory had faded over the years, and she said that it was not an accurate rendition, but it was as close to what she saw as she could remember nearly 40 years after she had observed this.
That must have been some impact for her to be able to recall it at all 40 years later.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Okay, so she, as I recall, asked him if she could bring this book back with her.
Yes, she did ask him if she could, and he told her that she could. She wanted proof that her experience had actually happened. And as she was leaving the craft, she and Barney were going to leave at the same time, and in Betty's dream they did. But under hypnosis, they did not leave at the same time. Barney was taken out first because the crew observed that Betty had the book. There was hubbub. There was a lot of yelling in this very strange buzzing or mumbling kind of language that these beings talked in. There was one whom I call a supervisor, and you'll see his picture in the book and read his description. But he was particularly upset. And then the leader said to her that they had decided that she would not be allowed to keep this book. She was very upset about this, and she was protesting, and they took the book away from her. And at that point, the leader said that he would walk her back to the vehicle. And they had a conversation along the way where Betty said to him, "You may not let me take this book, but I will never, ever forget this experience if it's the last thing I ever do." And he told her that it would be best if she did forget the experience, and that even if she remembered, Barney would forget about it. And if he had any memory, it would be different from Betty's memory. So there would only be a lot of confusion. But they had decided that it would be best that Betty and Barney would have amnesia for this experience.
It sounds, I don't want to say like they were benevolent, but it sounds like the encounter with the leader was, well, that he was by far more benevolent than the crew, or maybe the crew was in fear.
That could be. You know, that's all speculation, but the leader did seem benevolent. He did seem empathetic toward Betty's situation, at least.
The fact that he was willing to give her this book.
Yes. You know, he apologized to her for having to take that away and also for causing her so much pain and fright.
He apologized?
Yes. Yes.
That's fascinating. So I think the obvious is it's no need to ask you if you are convinced that they were really abducted.
Well, I am convinced now. I was not convinced at the outset of my research. I was highly skeptical. And that's the reason that I started this research. In my own mind, I wanted to know if it was a real experience. I had read so much skeptical literature about it that I wanted to test the hypothesis that Barney had merely absorbed a fantasy from that Betty had created in a dream state.
And what convinced you that that was not the case?
And my analysis, comparative analysis of the hypnosis tape vis-a-vis Betty's dream material, and I had a 5-page paper that she had written about her dreams to go by. I have very clear evidence that Betty and Barney's stories were the same, detail for detail, that there was no way that they could have communicated this information to each other, and this information was not in Betty's dreams, and even contradicted information in Betty's dreams. Some of the material that Betty experienced was the same as her dreams, but Barney was not in Betty's dreams, except for initially when they were taken to the craft. So none of Barney's experience was in Betty's dreams.
Uh-huh. What were the repercussions on their lives from this experience?
Well, the experience caused stress in their lives. You know, Barney developed a bleeding ulcer. He had high blood pressure. So he underwent a lot of stress over this. Betty had some anxiety about it, but she had a great deal of curiosity about it. But it was all to remain secret. It was all to remain confidential. And it was through a violation of confidentiality that this information was revealed in 1965.
Who broke the trust?
Paper articles. Excuse me?
I see. I said, who broke the trust? How did this information get out?
John Luttrell, who was a newspaper reporter from Boston, wrote for the Herald Traveler, the Boston Traveler. And he, as far as I have been able to determine, was a neighbor of a friend of Betty's. And this friend was a member of the two-state UFO study group. And Betty and Barney had allowed this friend of theirs to listen to the hypnosis tapes, to some of the tapes, and had told her the story in confidence. And I believe that it is this friend who talked to John Luttrell. They lived in the same community. They attended parties together. So I believe that this is how Luttrell got the information. I can't prove it, but I have a fairly paper trail to suggest that this happened.
And this has been, it went on, I remember there was even a movie made about the story, back when.
The movie was made in 1975. It was called UFO Incident, starring James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons. This was after Barney's death.
Barney died of the bleeding ulcer?
Pardon me?
Did he pass away from the bleeding ulcer?
No, he had a massive cerebral hemorrhage. This was during a huge blizzard. It was on February 25th, 1969, that Barney had this cerebral hemorrhage and died the same day.
Wow, that's intense. Well, it is just an amazing story. I mean, this is really probably one of the most important recountings of abduction in the history of, at least in our recent history, and it must be remarkable to have been so close to it.
It is, and it was truly remarkable. It had a huge impact upon my life, really opened my eyes up to realms of possibility that I never dreamed existed. And I found it fascinating, and I found my research, my investigation, to be so fascinating. And the work that I did with Stanton Friedman on this was also just some of the best things that I think that I have ever done. I had always dreamed of, I guess, of actually investigating and researching all of this. But when I finally did it, there was so much more there than I ever knew existed. There was a huge paper trail. There were so many scientists involved in the study of this case. There was so much credibility to this case, and it was taken as being credible by so many very bright, grounded, scientific, or scientifically minded people, that I found it truly fascinating.
Me too. I've always been just completely hypnotized by this story and the precision, especially when I met him, the Benjamin Simon, and saw the model. I became very enthralled, and I'm talking very many years ago. So you can imagine what an honor it is for me to have the opportunity to have you on the show, to talk to you firsthand, and to help people learn more about this story, which it seems to be in the background of our consciousness, but with your help and Stanton's and this wonderful book, people can finally get really to the nature, to the essence of the story. The book, again, captured the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience. I have read this book. It's a masterpiece of information. It's full, full, full. You've got to read it. It's Kathleen Martin and Stanton Friedman's book. Kathleen, tell us how people can reach you once again.
Yes, if you would like to purchase the book directly from me, it's autographed by both Stanton and myself, you can send a check for $18.99 to Kathleen Martin, P.O. Box 64, Greenland, New Hampshire, 03840. Or you can go to my website. It's HTTP, no www. It's KathleenMartin.googlepages.com. It's also available at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon, and from any bookstore.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want the book, you can, if you for any reason you can't remember the information you just got, just Google it, and I'm sure it'll be all over the web. Good old Google, what would we do without it?
Yes, my
name is... One last question for you, Kathleen.
Anne's name is there, and the book is there, all over the web.
For sure. I have one last question for you, and that is this. I know that I'm asking you for conjecture, and you clearly have a scientific mind.
Yes.
But I would like to ask you, what do you think was the purpose of this abduction? Why did these beings come down? Why, in the way that they did so differently than in other abduction cases, with the showing of the star map, the interaction with the leader, what do you think was the... I guess I'm not even sure about my question here. I'm trying to draw out of you as I'm trying to formulate in my mind what comes out of this experience for the future.
Well, it's very, very difficult for me to speculate about why Betty and Barney were abducted and why they had the experience they did. Many of the early abductions involved communication and showing of the interior of the craft, and other people have actually been shown star maps as well. So Betty was not the only one who had this experience.
I see.
All I can think of is perhaps they were a group of graduate students, astronauts from another planet who were down here and decided to pick up a couple of specimens and to examine them to see what life was like here. But many, many people have said that now that they were abducted years before Betty and Barney's first abduction, that they simply didn't remember it. So it is really a huge question, a huge dilemma, and I certainly don't have the answer to that.
But well, we'll leave that question hanging in the air as our time is up, but I think it's a question we're all going to be facing pretty soon, because it looks like the time of reunion, let's say, with beings from other planets may very well be upon us.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kathleen Martin. This is hopefully not the only time you'll be on my show. I really, really am grateful, and I look forward to having you back.
Well, thank you. I look forward to coming back.
Thank you, Kathleen. Don't miss this book, Captured, The Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. And with that, this is Patricia Corey. Beyond the Matrix, the show that asks you to move out of the box of convention, dare to think in the free thought zone. Good night and good day, everyone. I'll be back with you Thursday.